This week's episode is sponsored and brought to you by Factor. Life is so stressful and overwhelming, and sometimes we don't think we have the time to eat well and eat yummy food. With Factor, you can eat stress-free this spring with delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. They have over 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, and Veggie. And they have 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go, lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you with your life and finding what works for you. A lot of times, we just don't have the time. We can't figure it out. We get overwhelmed. We'll take the guessing out of it with no fuss, no mess meals tailored to your schedule that you can customize weekly, pause, or reschedule deliveries to suit whatever your life needs. Head over to factormeals.com/dudetherapist50 and use code DUDETHERAPIST50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is DUDETHERAPIST50 at factormeals.com/DUDETHERAPIST50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Go today. You don't want to miss out on this. I'm super excited for this week's episode with Dr. Siggy. I don't think you understand. She is the OG when it comes to being a child whisperer for unparalleled depth of insight in working with children of all ages for more than 35 years. She has worked with thousands of children and families across the U.S. and abroad, first as a teacher and then as a professor and counselor. Her method provides parents with practical tools and scripts to feel more empowered and less guilty. Her ultimate goal is to simplify the parenting journey and increase connection between parent and child. She is also a mother of three and runs her own private practice in Los Angeles. In this episode, we dive into the power of being able to know that it's not over as a parent. And in the end, she really helps me as a parent as well. So excited for you to see the truth behind the awesomeness that is Dr. Siggy. Let's get right into it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. This has been about 1 to 2 years in the making of back and forth and just schedules finally aligning. And I'm so honored to have you on, Dr. Siggy. You are one of the leading experts in today's world of parenting. And that's a hard thing to do because there are so many parents and so many opinions, and you know, parents can be very difficult to deal with as well as their kids. So I'm super excited to have you on because this is really impactful and important conversation. So Dr. Siggy, thank you for being on. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners so they know, if they don't know who you are, they get to know now?
Yes. So thank you so much. That was very sweet of you. So I'm Dr. Siggy, and I'm here to answer any questions regarding your children, parenting, and hope to be of help.
Okay. I love that. So I'm going to start with two hard questions, right? What do you think in this day and age, in the world though, or the modern world, are the biggest struggles that parents are dealing with and the biggest struggles that kids are struggling with?
Yeah, very good question. And I think that's a good introduction to everything that we're trying to do here as parenting specialists, right? And helpers of family dynamics in general. I would sum it up, the parents' biggest problem nowadays is, I would say, summed up by the word over. Mm. Over everything. Over explaining, that's number one. And so many of them come from a sense that they were not given explanations when they were children to what was going on. So they explain, which is great. They over-explain. They over-accommodate. They over-intervene. They over-judge what actually is going on without really accumulating information first. You know, the children are there. Mm-hmm. They over-solve. They solve every problem. They over-answer every question. So what happens as a result? The child becomes more and more passive in their own life. It's almost as if their own natural intelligence isn't employed, isn't used, their own natural coping skills, resilience, problem-solving skills, everything that is ingrained in our DNA, we're born with that. I'm not asking the five-year-olds to solve world problems, but just their own problems within their own little world. They are capable. But what happens when parents are so over-involved in all these many different areas, the children become passive in their own ability to join in, to brainstorm, to solve problems. And as a result, which is the biggest problem nowadays, we have so much more anxiety. And anxiety is bred not so much by the sense of danger or threat, but by the sense of helplessness. Mm-hmm. If I have no skills to manage, to deal, to go, cope, to face, to problem solve, I'm helpless. And that breeds anxiety.
Mm. I've never heard anxiety put that way. You know, I read probably a lot and a little too much. My wife wouldn't be so happy about how much I spend on books. But that aside, that is such a great way of putting it. When we feel we can't, I'm going to get overwhelmed. I'm going to get stressed. I'm going to, whatever word you want to use is going to create that environment. So what is the balance of a parent to jump? Because I know for me, I have a 4.5-year-old and a 22-month-old, right? And it's cute and it's adorable. And we have a new puppy and there's just a lot of stuff going on. When is it like the responsibility of a parent to jump in to help, to figure out? And when is it to watch? But sometimes I feel, and I've heard this from friends, myself, or colleagues, when it's just enough, when the kid is crying or complaining or whining, and you can sit back and let them solve it themselves, or you can jump in and just stop it from continuing for your own sanity. So where is the balance? What are your thoughts on that kind of dichotomy?
Yeah. So the main question is, when you jump in to solve it for your own sanity, are you really actually solving it? Right. So yeah. Let's start with that. But I think that parents absolutely should jump in when it's a true matter of life and death, real safety. Your child is about to jump off of a tree or run into the street. Yeah. Right there. I don't care what you look like, what it sounds like. Yeah. This is your main job. Save your child, absolutely. But your child isn't in that kind of threat or danger all the time. So what needs to happen in order for you to actually know what to do is to pause for a second, because the thing is this: children raise a sense of urgency because they live in the here and now. Everything to them is max and immediate. That's their world. This is their agenda and point of view. But your point of view is much bigger. So their scream of, it's the end of the world right now, is not your actually immediate sense of urgency. You have sensibility. Yes, it pierces right through you. You're like, I can't take it. But you do have sensibility. You can see the overall picture. So yes, your child, you know, the sibling grabbed something for them. To them, the end of the world. The scream is beyond, you know, what anybody can take. But you can see, okay, this isn't the end of the world. What I need right now is not to jump in, but to actually assess the situation. Because problem-solving skills are not based all the time on fight or flight. That's only in real danger. Every other times we have to actually take information in, we have to sort of calculate, use some logic, be sensible, be reasonable. So I say, parents, employ, apply, pause constantly. What you want to do is narrate, read the room, read the situation. Your child is under duress because of who they are developmentally, not because what their life is about. So their complaints, you never, you always, I never get, you don't do, I know you're going to say no, you know, like all these kind of things that they tell us, trigger us. Mm-hmm. We immediately lose sight and perspective. Mm-hmm. We need to take a moment to go, wait, what my child is saying, is that actually true? Mm-hmm. Is that reality? And mm-hmm. now, I don't want to patronize them for the fact that they see reality different than I do. Mm-hmm. I just want to understand that they do. And mm-hmm. then give them better guidance. Yeah, I can see your brother just grabbed this. Yeah, I know this is not good. It doesn't make you feel, or yes, you're not getting another ice cream, or no, we can't go to Disneyland right now, and so on. Yeah, I know you're disappointed, frustrated. It's okay. What would you like to do mm-hmm. about it? How do you want to help yourself? Mm-hmm. See, we want to teach our children to be there, not just as the problem, but also the solution.
Mm. And the way you're putting it is, for anyone who's listening, any parents or even for myself, that is not solving the issue for them. That is helping them understand what's going on and giving them context, perspective, so that they can figure it out, versus, you know, going to the other sibling, taking the toy, swapping it, and doing the action for them, and then going, here, shut up already, here's your darn toy, or yeah. fine, just get ice cream and give them, right? So that is jumping in too aggressive or with solving the issues itself. Right. This doesn't mean that if someone hits your kid, let's say a play date, then they come down, you don't say something, you don't go, like, this is not where you sit back and go, oh, you're fine, go away. That's not being helpful as a parent. But there's a balance between being aggressive as a parent, and I don't mean hurtful, I mean aggressive in action and solving every issue for your kid, versus being an active parent and being involved and helping them work through it so that they figure it out in their own brains and teaching them how to figure it out. And, you know, it is, you know, I work with clients all the time, and I say this, and one of the reasons why I work in relationships and parenting, those are the two specialties that I focus on the most. And of course, anxiety, because who doesn't come to therapists for anxiety anymore, right? Everyone. So myself included, like, come on, everyone's as stressed and anxious in this day and age. And so a lot of the times I say it's the hardest thing you're going to do. The two things, relationships and parenting, because it tests every aspect of your patience and your ability. So for the parents who are listening, you know, you're one of the leading experts in the world. You know, that time where I know right now, my wife and I are in the stage of the 4.5-year-old, her name is Ricky, where it's just constant whining, complaining, no patience. When she was last year, she was better at that. And now things are. So what do you do, and how do you help a kid work through that process or help them figure out their role and solution during the whining, complaining, no patience stage?
Right. So all of that whining, complaining seems as if these are problems your daughter, Ricky, is just basically throwing in your lap. Yeah. I'm whining, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I'm complaining, what are you going to do about it? This is really the dynamic. Now, her world is growing, which is why she's doing more complaining and whining. There's more for her to take in, which is really important for us to not take her problems, fix them, give them back to her. Here, your world is fine, which is sometimes what we do. Why are you complaining? What's the matter? Stop doing that. You're constantly whining. Why? And now we try in all these different ways. Look at everything you have and look at what we did. And don't you remember we went here and there? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, none of that actually gives perspective or proportion to anyone, right? It's like telling someone, relax.
Calm down,
Yeah, no. But what does help is self-reflection. What you want is not to tell your child how what she's doing affects you and how she needs to stop it. Mm. What you want is to tell her what she is feeling is something that you understand. You have empathy, you recognize, you validate. And then what is she going to do about it? What does she want to do about her own suffering, her own challenges? It's like that. Now I'm right here. I never say you're fine, go away. Mm-hmm. I'm actually saying I can see you're not fine. Mm-hmm. I also can see that you want me to do something, like fix it for you, right? I know. Yeah. I can have empathy in so many different ways and still just sit there. Mm-hmm. I'm not really doing much. I'm present. I'm not dismissive because I'm not saying, you know, I'm not asking all these questions and asking her to chime in when she's not really capable. Why are you whining is rhetorical to a child, because of course they're going to come up because, and I want
the world is ending.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You want to recognize, I can see you're not fine. I know. Yeah. Looks like it's difficult, right? Look like you're having a hard time. And she's, you know, yeah. And again and again and again. Give it back to them. Mm-hmm. Constantly think your child cannot just be the problem and you are the fixer. You're not even solving a problem. No. You're just constantly, you know, sort of like fixing these holes that they are presenting to you. But these problems are made up. I'm not dismissing the fact that this is what they're feeling, but they're still made up because they're subjective.
Yeah.
Think about boredom, think about frustration, think about fear, even anxiety. These are all subjective. You and I are not bored of the same thing. Yeah. We're not anxious about the same thing. We're not, it's not a real thing that we are all absorbing or taking in the same. It's all how we basically interpret it. So your child has a problem. It's her. It's personal. You're there. You're present. You're solid. You're grounded. But you're not taking it from her because you're anxious about, okay, fine, enough of that. You're there to help her walk through her own problem and get herself out of it because she's capable. So you trust. Sweetie, I can see this is hard for you. What do you want to do about it? And that may take time because, you know, if a child isn't used to it, they're like, well, and you're like, I can tell you're having a hard time. Look, I'm very authentic. I'm not trying to rush through. I'm not like, yes, I understand, but I'm not saying any of it. When I am empathetic, it's 100%. Mm-hmm. So I am giving my child that confidence and trust. I'm here. And still, you got to walk your own walk.
Yeah.
It's like no one can pull you out of this puddle you're in and get you to the other side.
Yeah.
Only you can get up. You have to use your own muscles, mental, physical, whatever they are. So I'm not, what happened? What's the matter? You're fine. Get up. I'm like, I can see you feel down, even if it's mental. I can see you're frustrated and disappointed. Mm-hmm. How do you want to help yourself? Mm-hmm. What do you want to do about it, sweetie? So give me more ice cream. Yeah. So now come in boundaries. I don't change my boundaries because my child is going to throw that solution. Mm-hmm. Solutions are not quick and instant. Mm-hmm. She didn't think about it. She wants what she wants. So I will say, I know. This is one solution. You're right. If I give you ice cream, everything's great. Yeah. It's not a good one for now because you already had ice cream or we're not having ice cream now. Do you have another solution? Can you help yourself in any other way?
I was actually just going to ask you that because, you know, putting the, sometimes parents might say, well, if I just get, let my kid decide, they're going to pick the thing that they want, but big picture, that might not be the correct option. So I'm glad you jumped because I was just going to ask you that next, because lately my daughter's been doing this thing. And I've heard this from a lot of parents when it comes to, let's say, breakfast or eating in the morning. I'm hungry. I want to eat. So my wife and I started saying, okay, there are four options. You get to pick which one, right? What are you hungry for? When you're ready, tell me, I'm right here. I'll make it for you. it's ready or ready, whatever it is, whether it's whatever options we have in the house. I don't know. I said, okay, I see you're getting overwhelmed, but like when you're ready, you know the options, you choose the same things every morning. I'm right here. And I just wait. And after like 5, 10, 15, she goes, Daddy, can I have whatever option she picks? Great job. I would love to do that. You did a great job figuring that out, right? Now, there are some mornings where she's gone, Daddy, I want ice cream for breakfast. I said, oh, that'd be awesome. I love ice cream, but that's not one of the four options that we have for breakfast. Maybe we can have that later. I said, okay, I get this frustrating. I would be upset too. Try to pick from the four, right? And I keep putting back. The hard part is that I've seen from a lot of parents that I work with and myself included is how long that can last sometimes. And you as a parent keeping your cool. So what are some of the things that you can suggest to parents and how they can gain perspective and what's actually going on in their kids instead of snapping, getting short with your kids, getting nasty or screaming or yelling or raising your voice with their kids when their kid is not doing anything particularly wrong, but just frustrating and maybe annoying. But what are some things and ideas you can give to parents when that all that stuff is happening?
Yeah. So one of the answers is less is more, because what I want to say is this, when I talked in the beginning about the over talking, what you said to her, she said, I'm hungry. Look at that. She summed up an entire problem with two words. I'm hungry. And now you had, I don't know, I didn't count, but about 10 sentences as a response. Yeah. See the imbalance? We talk too much. We think we're like respectful and nice and kind and giving. And it's like, whoa, I'm 4.5. I'm 5. I just said, I'm hungry. Okay. My response should be equivalent to what she just said. I hear you. Okay. First, you want her to stop and think and tell you what she's hungry for. But you were saying so much, it gets lost literally in translation of what a child. She's like, so some mornings she kind of does that. I tell you why, because she chooses to, not because you made sense to her. Also, most mornings, let's say that she follows that because she actually knows. You see, you also jump into, she says, I'm hungry. Truly, she wasn't born yesterday, even though she's only 4.5, 5. She's been with you. She kind of knows the house. She knows the routine. And we jump into it if it's a brand new problem because we're so eager to tell and fix and talk and be. And it's like, sweetie, you're hungry. I bet you know what you can have. Yeah. So are you giving it some thought? I want to be very much in present time. Literally walking. You want to almost see that in the most metaphoric kind of way, concrete way. Walk your child through their brain as it is applying those skills of thinking. I'm hungry is primal. Right? It's right there and she can actually verbalize it. But all the stuff we then say is overwhelming to the brain right there where it only has this one need. I'm hungry. I want her to start thinking. So I can't talk so much because it's like, whoa, wait, give me a moment. My brain is still just kind of like, you know, walking through me being hungry. All right. I bet you know what you need to do next. No, I'm hungry. Yeah, I get it. What would you like to do? Do you see that even there, I can have my child not be so passive while I lecture in so many ways? And I understand, and I want parents to know, I know you mean well. I know you're very present. You're right there. I just want you to understand, it's too much. Just go back a little bit. Just meet your child at their level. We walked into, you know, a drawing lesson and you're giving now a math lecture, you know, of whatever Einstein relativity and so on. It's like, whoa, meet me where I am. So that's a long answer to that. Notice that. Have your child chime in much quicker. Now, the back to the ice cream. I want ice cream. You do? Yeah. All right. Let's see. Let's pretend what I'm doing right here. And I can tell you, it's not always, but you can use imagination to help your child walk through a want. I want is basically just some, you know, some subjective personal emotion that they're having. I don't actually have to accommodate that. I just need to hear that. And then again, help my child break that through their skills. One of the skills they have is imagination. And I can jump right into that. If I want to, I don't have to do it every time. Other times I can say, you know, yeah, that would be a good idea. Humor is always a good thing. Again, slow down. And maybe, yeah, I think you know better. Are we going to have ice cream? But I want. Notice that. But I want. Mm-hmm. As if that's the entire argument. But I want. That's what they come with. Yeah, that's not a real argument. So I know you do. No, I want. I know. It's good to want, by the way. There's nothing wrong with that. We just don't always get that. I know. I can now continue. You know, maybe she's having a bit of a breakdown, but maybe you can talk through and you can say something like, do you sometimes get ice cream? Oh, I want ice cream now. No, no, I get it now. Do you sometimes get ice cream? Yeah, but I want it now. Yeah, I know. Maybe you can remember the last time you had ice cream. Yeah, that was so yummy. Actually, it was last night or yesterday. Mm. Last Saturday and so on. Walk your child through so they're actually self-reflecting, kind of breaking down the problem that they just presented as the biggest thing in the world. It's not. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, notice this. I'm not responding in so many words. I'm not immediately like, okay, do this, don't do that. How about it? You know, slow down. Cut your sentences to short statements. Be right there. Look at them. Recognize where they're coming from. Don't argue emotions. Mm-hmm. Don't try to speak sense to them when they're emotional. Walk them through their emotions so they can break down the emotion. You know, it's kind of like, I can tell you to relax when you're stressed, but I know that's not helping. What can you tell yourself? Is there anything you can tell yourself? I'm right here. I'm happy to, you know, to hear that, for you to run that by me. That's what we do, right? We are that grounding, that soundboard that people can sort of lean against. We're not solving the problems for them. Mm.
And then when, I love that. And then with the idea of parents, right? With all that happening, you know, that's a lot of work, of course. That's the role of parents, is to be there and to help out. How do we as parents, and how do anyone listening as parents, and I'm very big on this when I work with a lot of parents, is the idea of what they're feeling and how to make sure that they're not getting too hot and too aggressive, right? So how do we step away, or how do we de-stress, or how do we de-stimulate, I guess, or kind of keep our cool when a kid is behaving the way they should in a situation, right? They're not misbehaving or being bad. They're just expressing themselves, and we don't like it sometimes, and it's bad timing or, you know, in public, or, you know, all those kind of unfortunate situations that every parent has gone through in the middle of Target or at a park when they don't want to go. How do we keep our cool? What are some tips you can give the parent themselves to just make sure that they are on their game so their kids are okay, and learn and educate our kids instead of screaming and yelling and creating fear and intensity, which can overwhelm a kid and backfire eventually?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I agree that it is one of the hardest things, because we are also emotional creatures, and we are very much emotionally triggered. So we respond out of that emotion. So we have expectations, right? We expect a certain thing. What does that result in? Disappointment. Disappointment is a huge emotion. We're tired. We're spent in many different directions. A lot of it is based in judgment. We judge our children without, right? And it's based in some, I expect them, you know, don't you know better? And why are you doing this to me? And how many times? And all that basically tells our story as emotional human beings. Right there in front of our child, we can't be so emotional because they they actually take over, you know, in that aspect, the arena of emotions, because they are 90% emotions and some, you know, instinct reactions and so on. So we can't be emotional with them. We have to stay above or outside the emotions. Basically, what it means is that we have to so much work on our own mindfulness. What am I feeling right now? I can't take it. I don't want to. I'm frustrated. I'm tired. If I recognize I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm disappointed, I'm even regretful. Why did I even do this? Why am I even here? Why am I buying you? Why? Yeah, it's all about me. Who's going to fix all these emotions right then, my child? Yeah. But that's what we do. We basically dump our emotions back to them, hoping that they change their behavior so we feel better. So one aspect of what we can do is really constantly, and I know it's not 100%, and I don't expect it, and I want parents to know, the fact that you make mistakes is actually okay. Don't worry about it so much. You're not supposed to be perfect. Part of life is that it's imperfect, and that's how we learn. But the more you recognize how you feel and tell yourself, and then be the adult, I got this. Wow, I'm so frustrated right now. I really just want to walk away and leave this kid here. Okay, but I got this. I'm not really going to do it. And I'm not going to say, you see, I feel that I'm like, if you're not, I'm just walking away and I'm going to leave. I mean, we say stuff like that. I can think that. And then I have to kind of go, okay, I'm not really going to do that. So what does it mean? I got it. I got it. I can do it. And now I have to be the grown up, the adult, the sensible, you know, the sensible mind, sort of like the wise. I see, yes, this is tough. You're frustrated. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through it. So basically, notice your own emotions. Don't avoid them. Don't react out of your emotions like your child. Be the grown-up, be the adult. Set them aside by recognizing. That's, in a nutshell, what mindfulness is and how we are constantly working at that. And the other thing is, sometimes it's going to get away from you. Learn to accept that, actually, that you're not perfect. Your kids are not perfect. The situation's not perfect. It's not always going to be that way. And it's almost like, wow, you know, a moment later you can say, wow, yeah, this was a big tantrum in the middle of Target. I really just wanted to get away. I didn't. I stuck to, I got through. It doesn't happen all the time. What can we do to prevent it next time? Talk differently, react differently, learn from the experience. Not, that's it. I'm never going to Target with you, right? That's like, okay, that's finally not going to happen. We're never going to the park. I'm never buying you. I'm never taking you to. I mean, this is what our kids say. You never do this. You always. They're not rational, but we are supposed to be. So hold off on all these things that, you know, that babble that runs through your mind. Don't actually say that. Compartmentalize it. Recognize it. And then stay outside of your child's emotions and your emotionality. It's like I say, stay outside the chaos. Your child is in the midst of chaos with their behavior, and you're jumping right in. You cannot rescue them this way or yourself. Stay outside of it. It means, it's okay. I got this. I got this. I don't know how. You can even say that. I don't know how we're going to get out of this, but we will. The more I stay grounded and calm and confident, the more I can stay the leader here. And that's what your child needs, a leader, a mentor, someone they can look up to, not someone that's acting, reacting just like they are.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Love that.
That makes sense.
Oh, it makes all the sense. You know,
and it's hard. I'm going to say it again. Parents, please know, I'm not expecting you to just do it like that. But I know it makes sense. So that's what you're working for.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the hardest part is that staying out of the chaos. That was like a great, just that one liner, that staying out of the chaos is something that a lot of, myself included, I'll throw myself in there. Sometimes we get pulled into it so easily. And I think reminding ourselves that we can do it, we'll be okay, it'll be fine. And sometimes we have to go in the, like, this is my opinion, I'd love to, sometimes we have to go in the chaos to take them out of the chaos. So for example, kids in Target screaming, it's literally just happened, you know, we had to leave somewhere. Sometimes you got to pick your kid up and get away from the situation, and then you step out of the chaos to be the best parent you can. But in that scenario, in that context or where you are, you can't step out of the chaos because you're getting triggered, you're getting overwhelmed, you're getting pulled into it so equally with the kid that you have to go out of it. You have to pull the situation away, pull them aside to a quiet place, get them away from the Target tantrum and get them in the car or get them in the parking lot or whatever is safe, right? So then you actually could then step out of the chaos. Is that a helpful thing to say? Is that smart? Is that, because sometimes we just have to act, pick the kid up, get away from all of it, and then be able to step out of the chaos. Is that a good thing we can do, or is that not suggested?
You can, but I will say, you know, it's hard to pick up a five-year-old that's tantruming in the middle of, you know, maybe you can, but maybe mom with the stroller and the cart and another baby and so on, yeah, right? Like if you both parents, yeah. So maybe that's not actually possible. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons you want to get out of Target, you know, when your daughter's having a big tantrum is because maybe you're worried about everyone else. So I will say this, mm-hmm. The market, Target, try to not, look, the restaurant is different. Like a restaurant is usually much more, you know, you can't have a five-year-old screaming in the middle of a restaurant and just kind of go, oh, well, you know, it's hard. So maybe the restaurant is like, okay, the door is like, you know, 10 feet away, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But Target is big. The supermarket's big. I would say if you can't, actually just sit this one out, like mm-hmm. right there in the corner and tell yourself, mm-hmm. there hasn't been one Target employee that hasn't heard a screaming child. Oh, well, people mm-hmm. that are walking by are going to judge me. Well, I can't do anything about it. And actually, many of them have some empathy because they've been there. They mm-hmm. know. So also tell yourself, many parents are like, yeah, I've been there. I know. So try to not get that noise interrupting you with what you actually need to do. So if you can't actually get your child out, do this. Just stay there and go, I can see you're very disappointed. I know. Now, I would say that if a five-year-old is throwing, even a 4.5-year-old is having like such a big outburst, we definitely want to draw conclusions from that for next time. Mm. And this is not about punishing them or not taking them to Target mm-hmm. or letting them know, you know, next time, don't. It's really kind of taking the whole scenario and going, what went wrong? Your child picked something up and I immediately jumped. Don't do that. You can't. I want, you know. Try to see if you added to the tension and the hysteria by being somewhat on edge yourself. Did you walk into Target immediately with all the, but remember, we're not buying anything, we're not getting. So you are adding a lot of negativity to an experience that maybe could have just been okay. So walk into Target, preparing your child next time. And maybe even right there and there, you could start saying, you know, I think that when we came into Target, you kind of had an idea in your mind, like you thought that maybe you're going to get something, even though I said, so take responsibility, break it down and see your part, not necessarily I'm sorry and so on, but really sensibly seeing how you possibly contributed. And then, you know, think to yourself, next time, what's the preparation to target? So, sweetie, we're going to Target to buy a gift for your friend's birthday. And also, or not at all, we're not buying any gifts today. We need some stuff. I don't know, paper towels and this. Can you help me with that? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you this. We're not buying toys. We're not. And sort of like foresee that emotion, because your child can promise, yeah, yeah. But the moment they see something, I mean, they're kids. They're immediately tempted. So prepare them for that. You might see something that you're really going to want. We're still not going to buy it, no. And you're really, really going to want it. So what are some of the things we can do? You can think about it. You can plan. You can hold on to it in your imagination. Because let's say, let's walk through and you see something and you're like, can you literally take that into your mind? No, we're not buying it. You're not taking it with you, but you can take it here. You can think about it. And while we're walking to Target and you're helping me find the paper towel or the shampoo that we need, can you tell me what would you do with that if you had it? How would you use it? See, part of having is a connection. It's not the object, the item, the stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not what we really have. It's what we feel we have. And what you're working on with your child right there is metaphysical, having things that are metaphysical, not necessarily physical, a connection between you and her, because you understand where she's coming from. She promised that she's not going to ask, but she's a kid. And she saw it and she's triggered by it and she has no control over it. But you understand that. You're not judging her for that.
Yeah.
It's a long answer.
No, I love long answers. It makes my job as a podcaster host easier, and I get to learn from you so much more. You know, we only have a couple more minutes, and you know, I could talk to you for hours about this, because to me, parenting is something that's so part of my life as a parent, as well as something that I am so passionate about, to help parents simplify. Because, like you said, and I haven't put it that way, but I might quote you now over and over again. That word over, that over, something over. I do and we all do so often, and we make scenarios more complex than they need to be.
Yeah.
Which just creates a monster of its own, an environment of its own, and so many things that we can totally skip and not happen if we simplify. I do that with relationships. I do it with parenting. A lot of times we overcomplicate and we overtalk and we overdo. And I think that to me is one of the most important things you said, and the way you put the anxiety and the world we live in today, you can see how helplessness is something that is so pervasive in so many parts of our lives, where I'm sitting with clients who are in their 30s saying, oh my gosh, I have 14 things on my schedule today, and their daily tasks. Laundry, brushing their teeth, taking a shower, clipping their nails, hygiene, and doing chores of the house is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you wonder, what? The question I have for you, and this is probably the last question I can get to you today, because you have a very busy schedule, and I'm so honored that whatever time I can get, I'm going to squeeze as much as I can get out of you. What has been some of the beautiful things that have shifted in parenting over the years of your expertise? And what have been some of the things you think that have changed that you think maybe didn't need to change?
Right. I want to say that one of the beautiful things, and this is why we have gone or taken it a little too far, because it starts somewhere good. Parents are more involved. Parents are more respectful. Parents want to be there for the children, to connect. All of that I won't change. I'm just asking them to tone it down, to literally measure the dosage. You don't have to have so much of something to be able to actually benefit from it, right? Mm-hmm. Ice cream is great, but are you going to eat it all day long? Chocolate cake is amazing, but am I going to sit and eat the whole chocolate cake? It's like, whoa, no. You see, that's kind of how you want to think about it. So if I have a piece of chocolate cake, wow, I love it. I enjoy it. Not every day. Sometimes it's great. That's what I want parents to recognize. You are respectful. You are educated. You are educating yourself. You're conscious. You're mindful. You care about your children's well-being. Keep a lot of that in mind. It doesn't mean you have to do all of it. Mm-hmm. That's what I want you to sort of cut down. Like, I can be respectful to my child just by being right there. That's the number one thing. So what has happened is our parents are very aware. So they take almost every little thing that didn't happen in their life and completely turn it over to give it to their child. Well, I didn't have that. Okay, that's your life. Maybe you need some healing. Maybe you need to undo some of that trauma even and so on, for sure, which is great. But your life, your child's life, not exactly the same. You can't just give somebody what you didn't have because it's just impossible. So again, think like that. I didn't have that. Okay. Does that mean that my child needs to compensate for what I didn't have, or I'm compensating for my lacks by giving it to my child? A lot of it is really just being thoughtful. Really thinking about all these things that we jump too quickly without thinking. So that's what I would say. You know, you are already very much there. I tell parents this a lot, you know, but I want my child to be happy. Why are you assuming they're not? And why would you think that they need to be happy all the time? That's not even impossible. I say that, right? Happy is not a goal. Happy is another emotion that comes and goes, and it's very personal and subjective. And I'm sorry, but if something scary is happening, you're not supposed to be happy. If something sad is happening, you're not supposed to be happy. You can't be happy all the time. So rethink that. And I just want my child to be happy is something that you have to work on. You know, where is that coming from? What you want is your child to be functional, first and foremost. So think about that, you know. How am I helping my child become a functional person? So they're in their 30s and they don't have a list of such simple to-dos that they can't get through because it's overwhelming. Because did you do everything for them? Did you fix it all for them? Did you answer every question, every problem? So they never learned any of that. That's what I want to go back a little bit to. Parents used to recognize that their children need to be functional, responsible, not just happy. So I would say, don't abandon that.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time. I know you have to go take care of a lot more things in life and change the world in every way that you do. You know, your contact information, your email address regarding your website is going to be in the show notes. Anyone who wants to reach out to Dr. Siggy, please do. She is one of the best out there to help parents across the entire world. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Do Therapist Season 5. Can you believe it? I can't. What a journey. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whether it's your first episode you've listened to, or you've been a follower since the beginning, or just trying to catch up, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for really jumping in on this awesome opportunity and learning experience. You know, if you have any questions, ask them. You have thoughts, say them. I didn't finish a thought, or you have more ideas of what you would like to hear, just let me know. The door is open, so to speak, so please walk right in. Tell me what you think. Again, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist, and hope that you tune in next week.